J.M. DeBoer, The Science of the Paranormal, The Truth Behind Telepathy, ESP, Reincarnation, and More Mysterious Phenomena. Picking up where we left off.
And if any of this stuff is true, if we can prove even one of these things as being real, then we have just nulled the hypothesis that none of it is real, because we can actually prove it now. Like Elizabeth Mayer, the psychotherapist taught at the University of San Francisco, I mean, professor level, right? And, or not like tenured professor, but she was an instructor there. Very, very well regarded in her field. Never thought that there was anything to any of this parapsychology stuff. And then she had an experience where she used a dowser to find a precious instrument that had been stolen from her daughter while her daughter was at a recital. And she's heard from, like, she looked everywhere, couldn't, you know, like, there's, this thing is gone. There's no chance of ever finding it again. It was stolen, like, backstage, right? She's like, she heard about this guy who was a dowser, and a colleague said, you know, you got nothing to lose. So she gives this guy a call, and he's in Arkansas. She's in San Francisco. And he says, send me a map of the area. She does the overnight mail. She sends him a map. He points to exactly where it is. He's like, it's in Oakland, and it's at this intersection. He pointed it out on the map for her. And then she went to the location. She's looking around. She's going, what am I going to do? Go knock on doors? Like, hey, give me back the handmade violin or cello or whatever it was that you stole from my daughter at that recital last week. She's like, I can't do this. She's like, how am I going to do this? So she posted flyers in that block saying, hey, if you've seen this instrument, please give me a call. A few days later, she gets a call from someone who says, yeah, I saw my neighbor with it. And a week or 2 weeks later, arrangements were made for her to meet up with that person or their representative and get the instrument back. It was really there, exactly where a dowser 2,000 miles away used his abilities to pinpoint exactly where that stolen item was, down to the very house that it was in. So you tell me how that guy could do that. The only thing I came up with, thinking of it from a skeptic's point of view, is that the dowser, he was the president of the Dowser Society. I can't pull his name up right now. He was really famous for what he did. Flew to San Francisco secretly, investigated the crime, and found out where the thing was, but then didn't tell Elizabeth about it because he was still pulling the wool over her eyes, trying to make her think that, you know, he could actually do this kind of stuff with his own mind. So that was the only explanation I could come up with. But Elizabeth said that that was the moment when she pulled into her driveway after she's got the instrument in the car. She's driving back from Oakland where she's gone to make this dead drop. I mean, kind of like, you know, she said it was like in a grocery store parking lot. She meets somebody and they got the instrument and, you know, and an exchange was made. And she drives home and she has back this item that she thought she would never see again. And she's like, this changes everything because I've just seen it demonstrated for myself in an incontrovertible sort of way. And so she started looking into the literature. She's like, okay, I'm a scientist. I have a PhD, I have a doctorate. You know, I know how to look into the literature and find what's out there. She wasn't expecting to find anything published that would affirm anything that she had just witnessed for herself. But she's like, wait a minute, look at this. Look at the Gonsfeld telepathy studies. Look at these remote viewing studies. You know, look at these precognition studies. People have actually demonstrated this stuff. And yet, when she would bring this information to her colleagues publicly, they would be like, oh, yeah, there's nothing to it. It must be bad science. It's junk. You know, debunk it. But then what she said is that when she started getting known for being somebody who was interested in the subject, she started having her colleagues coming to her and describing things that they had experienced personally. And that's when she realized that despite the impression that there is no evidence out there for any of this, stuff, that it's all been disproven, that it's all bad science, et cetera, et cetera. She's like, no, actually the truth is there is a lot of really good science out there. And just like anything else, there were some questionable studies published and, you know, things that maybe you can't accept the validity of, but there were others that were as sound as science can possibly get and met the very highest standards. And then there was the fact that she had experienced it for herself. And that's when she ended up writing a book about her experience that I think gives the best explanation for how this all works. And if you have a second, I want to give this to you, Wendy, and for your listeners.
I love that. Yeah, I've got the book. I've got the book. It's excellent.
Well, here's where she came up with an insight. She said that when you tune into these deeper perceptual abilities, and this is what Ingo Swann liked to call it too. He said, I'm a perception researcher. I'm not a psychic. These are perceptual abilities, a sixth sense of sorts. She said that it's like looking at a map. Like if you have a world map, where do your eyes naturally go to? Your eyes go to the land masses. There's North America, there's Africa, there's Asia. You see the land masses. We'll try focusing sometime on the oceans. See the shape. You know, we're all familiar with the world map. And if you can see, you know, you can probably picture it in your mind right now. There's North America, it snakes down to South America. There's, you know, Europe, and there's Africa, there's Asia. You can picture the land masses, but can you picture the shape of the oceans? Most people, when they look at a map, are looking at the land masses and not at the oceans. She said that these deeper perceptions are the same sort of way. Usually, we are using our physical senses. We are looking at the land masses on the map. But if you shift your focus, then you can start seeing the things that are there in the background all the time, but usually you're not noticing them. And this is where that deeper sense comes into play, that sixth sense comes into play. And I thought that her explanation for it, she was a psychoanalyst. She was very interested in finding out some reasons for how this could work, which when you read the criticism of the science, the thing that keeps popping out is that even the critics who were willing to accept the evidence, like Ray Hyman, who was a University of Washington professor who became known as a critic of parapsychology, but he was at least somewhat open-minded about it. He said, look, I see the evidence, and some of this stuff is pretty good. I mean, you've come up with statistical stuff that's very highly suggestive. But the problem is that you've shown that there are these effects, but you haven't proven to us anything about the causes of these effects. And if you want science to accept this, then you have to explain how it works. I thought, after reading that there must be nothing really good out there that's been published about how this works. It's actually the opposite. There's some great stuff out there. You know, Elizabeth Mayer and her way of explaining, you know, her map analogy. That was one of them that was a great, I thought, you know, a great way of showing it. And then there's another one that came out of the remote viewing program. There's a physicist by the name of Ed May who ran one of the remote viewing programs on the military side. He ran the program for 10 years and he was involved with it for 20 years. And he came up with this, what he noticed is that the entropy change, when you have high degree of entropy change, that psychic functioning such as remote viewing works better. So to give an example, if I show you a picture of a dog lying there taking a nap, or this is in an envelope and I want you to sort of use your mind to try to, you know, draw this picture with your mind. What is inside the envelope? You know, well, the envelope, it contains a picture of a dog sleeping. Yawn. You know, it's not real exciting. There's no entropy change. There's no energy implied through the picture. But if you take the same dog and you have them jumping into the air to grab a frisbee, that implies a high degree of entropy change. There's basically a high degree of energy that's being expended. It's just a picture of it. But those pictures, when used in remote viewing studies, gave much better results. And Ed May, and it was kind of, honestly, it was kind of hard for me to follow. I read his paper, but he went really deep into the physics. And I went, okay, I understand this well enough that I'm going to present, you know, this as part of the book. And I'm going to make the argument that people who say that there have been no explanations for the causes to these effects simply have not read the literature. It's out there. The explanations for the stuff and how it could work are actually out there. And critics like Ray Hyman should be reading this stuff, because it seems to be that we're on the verge of unlocking something about the human capacity that has been either dormant or systematically suppressed, probably going back centuries. We have to consider that there is a great fear surrounding these subjects, and that fear is epigenetic. It's epigenetic because we have a history going back many centuries, especially in the West, where people who demonstrated that they could do things like energy healing, or they know the secrets, they just know it intuitively. They know that the priest has been doing something they shouldn't do. Well, next thing you know, the Inquisition shows up, and they make sure that that person is never heard from again. There were tens of thousands, if not more, hundreds of thousands of people who died in the most horrendous sorts of ways. They were tortured and burned to death for opening their mouths about the things that they knew to be the truth, because they could pick it up through these other means. So I think that we have to grapple with the fact that that sort of suppression has made this stuff go deeply underground, and that we are now just getting to the point where we can pop our heads up and say, maybe it's safe to allow this to come forward again. Maybe it's safe now to practice energy healing, to practice clairvoyance, divination, things like that. For individuals who maybe didn't know that they could do this too, to get the message, this is something that everyone can do. And especially when it comes to your own personal healing, this is going to give you the sort of motivation. There are people who are finding that mainstream medicine isn't doing it for them. So they're investigating these other modalities, and they're finding that the power to heal their own bodies and their own minds is theirs if they will get over the fear that has been ingrained into us to stay away from this kind of stuff, and instead just go see the doctor and have them write you a script or whatever. You know, like, they have their answers for you, and it doesn't always work for all people. And I think that what's been happening is that people are now awakening to the fact that we really do have these deeper capacities. And now, right now, is the time for us to put aside all the fear and to tell the debunkers to go and just, you know, have their own little circle jerk, because the rest of us are tired of hearing their crap. And we're tired of being denied something that is our birthright, because there's some people who don't like it, and it goes against their way of understanding the world. Their world exists that there's only physical matter. There's only the physics of the way that all these forces and particles and material works together, that it's a dead universe, and that there's nothing deeper to it. There's no human spirit. There's definitely not a soul. There's nothing eternal about any of this. It's all just random chance. Life emerged from random processes. Things got put together. It's all just a big cosmic joke. And that's what they want us to believe. They are doing everything that they can to try to maintain that grip, because it gives them power, and they will not give that up. But it's doing it's not a joke anymore. It's like, it's doing so much damage. It's preventing us from actually evolving to what the next evolution of the human being should be, which is much more conscious of what we really are and what we're capable of. So Wendy, thank you for giving me a chance to get that message out.
Excellent. I do want to mention two things. In the book, you mention the philosopher Bryce Hammond. And I think there's a quote I pulled. Our brains and bodies, and consequently our minds and consciousness, emerge out from nature, from the universe, while still being absolutely a part of that nature and universe. We are not separate from nature looking out onto nature, but we are nature looking at itself. Okay, from that quote, this is a little for people who are interested and want to practice some of the things that they're going to read about in your book. This is a dowser, Raymond Grace. The one you mentioned from Elizabeth Mayer's book, He's Deceased. The Future is Yours, True Stories, Dowsing, Spontaneous Healing, Ghostbusting, and The Power of the Mind. And he's incredible. I've read a lot of his stuff. He has a YouTube channel. But Raymond Grace is the real thing, authentic, and you'll learn a lot from that. If you really want to do this and practice and get your A game on when it comes to these abilities, that's a resource. To learn more about these abilities, then the book, The Science of the Paranormal, The Truth Behind Telepathy, ESP, Reincarnation, and More Mysterious Phenomena. You've done a fantastic job. It really, it's like, you know, a 5-star. How's that? Out of 5 stars, 5 stars.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that so much. It really felt like I was coming to bat for people like you who have been putting this information out there for years, interviewing the people and citing the resources and talking about the books and interviewing the authors and the experiencers. And I felt like when this came to me as a project that the publisher wanted me to take on, I said, not just because my own personal interest in the subjects, but also because I knew that there were other people out there who have been, they've been blowing on that horn for years. And we are gradually sort of shifting where the baseline is. It's going more towards acceptance and belief. So I wanted to do my part in that. And I hoped to do it in a way that could really grab the public. Like, not just a dry science book. This is a fun book. I created a narrative around it to be able to take you from page 1 to page 220. And you can read it all in just, it would be a lot to take in one sitting, but like it could just breeze right through it. I just got an Amazon notice. My niece, who's, like a sophomore in high school, it just arrived at her door. As we've been talking, I saw Amazon say, because I sent her a copy of the book. Uh-huh. And I wanted it to be something that a 10th grader could read. And I wanted it to be something that somebody who is a retired, PhD physicist could read, and both of them would find it equally fascinating and accessible. There'd be enough for the scientist to say, okay, this guy cites his sources and he understands the science, but then for the sophomore in high school who can look at it and go, wow, I can't believe that, these people have had these experiences and I haven't heard about this before. So, but I was doing it for us. All the people who have been involved in this and pushing that ball forward for years, and that's, if I accomplished that, then I feel really good about what we've done. And we've done it together, Wendy, because this book wouldn't be there if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for Jeff, if it wasn't for Elizabeth, if it wasn't for Jeffrey Keane, Jeffrey Mishlove, this book wouldn't be what it is, because it took a lot of courage for you guys to come forward to kind of go against the grain and say, actually, this stuff is really fascinating. Why isn't everybody on this bandwagon?
Oh, you bet. You bet.
Ingo
Swann, so Alex Tanis, all these fantastic people who have said, this is how it's done. Take it forward. Improve on it. You got this. And the end notes, okay? Don't skip the end notes, because this is where all the real gold is. You've given some wonderful little breadcrumbs, or big breadcrumbs. It's wonderful.
Well, there's an index in it too. You can quickly find information. There's all those, the end notes, 100 and something citations. I think it's like 120 in the end, or was it? God, was it over 200? Sorry, I've been writing another book too that requires a lot of citations.
I was looking at the YouTubes, like, okay, there you go. Persinger's, I'm looking at the lectures and stuff. It's like, okay. Yeah, so there's something for everyone here. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you for giving me a chance to come back on your show and share this. I really feel like I did it for us. It's been fascinating, and I really do appreciate you giving me a chance to talk with you about it.
I didn't ask you if there was anything paranormal that you had experienced.
My first experience with my own experiences did inform a little bit of the way that I put the book together. There's none of that in the book as far as my own personal experiences, although I did research. There is actually some of my own research. It was a lady who had these fantastic dreams. I ended up talking with her for hours about what she experienced. And it was on the Dreams That Shape Us podcast. And we interviewed her, my co-host and I. So there's a little bit of that in it. But as far as my own personal experiences of this, I've had experiences of precognition. I've had dreams that came true. Now, was it the big one like David Booth, who's one of the people in the book, who he dreamed 10 nights in a row about a plane crash? And then on the 10th morning, it happened. Like the plane actually crashed. There's a whole story in there about it. It was an American Airlines flight. He contacted the FAA to try to figure out once he knew that those dreams were actually going to happen. Now, that it was going to come true. He knew it, but he couldn't get anybody to respond to it in a way that he could actually prevent it from happening. But I've had less dramatic, but still very personally affirming dreams that showed me things that were going to happen in the future in a way that was not ambiguous. It happened the way that I dreamed about it. So I've had those experiences. And I'm studying now a protocol. I just got licensed, and I've been studying a methodology for energy work. It's called somato-respiratory integration. It dovetails with a chiropractic specialty known as network spinal analysis. I wanted to know as much as I could about it because I experienced the healing. I experienced it on the table with my chiropractor where her name is Mother Mira. I've been doing darshan with her remotely over the internet. She's an avatar. She's a Hindu woman who basically sits down, looks at the camera. Now, if you see her live, you can do this live with her. But now she does twice a day where she goes live on her YouTube channel. She looks at the camera and she enters into your energy field. And I experienced it on the table, and it brought healing to me for things that had been intractable. And I absolutely knew that what I experienced was real, that her energy, her presence came into the room as we were doing the healing session with the chiropractor. And I was like, yeah, I think I know what my calling is now. I learned I'm not going to be a chiropractor, but I learned this supplemental practice that I was using to that point called SRI, somatic respiratory integration. I was doing it as my own practice recommended by the chiropractor. And then when I would go in for the sessions with the chiropractor, I found that it worked very different, that it was like compounding the results. It was real, genuine healing. Network spinal analysis is not the old snap and crack chiropractic. This is not manual adjustment. What this does is it helps your spine to release tension so that the natural, deeper healing capacities of your body can come online. Your body heals itself. And I have the proof because my spine, my scoliosis is gone. I mean, it comes back when I get under a lot of tension, it comes back. But I've learned now the difference. Once I released all that tension out of my spine, I went, oh my God, this is the way that people are supposed to feel. Like this is how healthy, normal people feel. But I'd had that tension. It was, basically PTS, post-traumatic stress. It absorbs into your spine. It absorbs into the tissue. Your body holds on to the memory and the emotion. So network spinal analysis is a protocol for teaching the body how to remap its relationship with the brain. And you can actually gain more access to your body mentally through your own mind so that you can then get in there and go, okay, there's this place where I'm wounded. It's in my nervous system. How can I let it go? And Wendy, it's probably the best, if this catches on, then it's for the treatment of trauma, it's years worth, you can have years worth of therapy in one session on the table as far as the results. You could go to a psychologist and talk for years about your trauma, or you can have a really powerful session like I did and get better results. So it, I found that it actually works. So yeah, I've had a few experiences, precognition. The other night I had something happen that was really wild. It was like an orb. It was purple. It was small. And it was centered on a plant. It was like it was one of those little plant spirits. I don't know what you would call them. Mm-hmm. The fairies. I don't know. It was a purple orb. And I saw it in three dimensions, 2 feet in front of my own eyes. I went, oh. So that's what these things are that people talk about. Yeah. I'm like, I've never seen anything like that before. Yeah. But then I saw it for myself, and I went, wow. And it was a beautiful, that purple is just beautiful. So I said, hi. This is one of the things that came out of the research. And this is probably one of the reasons why the warheads, you know, these people who are very militaristic mindset, hate this stuff so much, is what really works is when you work from a space that's in your own heart. It's a requirement. Mm-hmm. You have to go into it from a heart space. This is what the Jake Barber with Skywatcher and his, you know, he was that Air Force Special Operations guy who had the experience of divine connection through while he's doing his job on a secret special forces mission. He has an encounter that changes his life. And he said that it came in through his heart. And what he found out from continuing to do this work is that these, they call them the psionic assets. They tell them this isn't going to work unless you do it from your heart. And people who are closed off to their hearts look at this and they go, screw you. They don't want to accept that this is how the intelligent energy works. And it is. It's intelligent. It's energy.
Yeah.
And I think that we have an explanation for it. Anybody who wants to know this, read Robert Temple's book, the new science of, it's the plasma science. 99.9% of the universe is made up of an energy. And they're proving now that that energy is self-organizing and has its own intelligence. They've demonstrated it. But yeah, it was that this is, it responds to your heart. Whatever's in your heart, that is what emanates out. It is so much stronger than what's in your brain. Your brain has a tiny electromagnetic field compared to your heart. Your heart is what interfaces with your environment, with the fabric of reality of the universe itself. That's what I found too, because when I was on the table and the Divine Mother appeared, I mean, she was right there. I saw her clairvoyantly as clear as day. I saw her in my mind's eye. And she said, connect with me, open your heart, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And the chiropractor kept hitting the little spots on the spine that's supposed to open up the gateways of the spine, and she's doing all this work. And it's just, boom, my nervous system is opening up. And I'm just feeling it. I'm feeling the chi rolling through my body. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't care what the skeptics have to say.
That's the Kundalini.
Real. Yeah. It's wonderful. And it was the Kundalini. Yeah. So that's, I have experienced it for myself. So maybe for that reason too, I was the right person to write this book because I already came into it knowing from personal experience that, you know, I don't care what the data says. I would like it to affirm it, but, you know, I don't have to have that affirmation from the scientific method because experience. I've had it myself.
Your website, J.M. DeBoard.
Did you read the end? Because that was written for you.
Oh, well, Ingo says you can't explain consciousness. You can't explain anything that falls under. If you can't explain consciousness, you can't explain anything that falls under the umbrella of parapsychology. Yes, Ingo knows. Slam dunk.
Yeah, and that the scientific method excludes experiences or phenomena of consciousness because the scientific method is for studying material phenomena. And we have to get over this idea that consciousness arises from physical process. Consciousness is beyond that. What it is, I don't know. I think consciousness is primary. I think we have the whole thing reversed. that consciousness came first and physical matter came second. Sort of within the bubble of consciousness, you have the universe. Most people can't even begin to wrap their mind around that idea. And they say, well, no, you had cellular processes gave rise to different forms of life and advanced, you know, nervous systems that gave rise to human beings who have a brain that has this capacity, and it generates consciousness because we can look inside the brain and say that it generates consciousness. But they've tried for decades to prove where and how and haven't gotten anywhere with it. None of those theories have been proven. They've all been disproven, in fact. But there's still one that's left over. And Ingo hit it right on the head when he said, you can't get anywhere with parapsychology if you're still trying to use the scientific method. We have to come up with a new science of consciousness. And that's how I ended the book. And I knew that people like you who've dug into Ingo and know his work and know what he's done, this was the perfect way of ending the book, because I end it with a challenge. Are we ready to find out how deep the rabbit hole really goes, what consciousness is really capable of, and how it fits into this picture of this, you know, this physical reality that we're all part of? So it's there. I laid down the crucible. I threw down the gauntlet. I said, okay, people, if you really want to know, we have to come up with a way of studying this stuff scientifically, but we can't just stick to the scientific method because it wasn't created for studying consciousness. It was created for studying matter. And when I saw that from Ingo's speech that he gave to the Remote Viewing Society, I think it was the last public speech that he gave before he died. And I went, yep. It was like he was looking at me going, oh, Jason, and by the way, you're writing that nice little book you're writing for that New York publisher that's probably going to get a lot of traction. Why don't you include this as the conclusion of your book? It was like he was speaking to me. It was like, oh, God, Ingo, you're right, though. You're exactly right. The point that he made was exactly right. And I'm like, okay, this is how we end the book, and we end it with a challenge. Come on, people. There's so much here to be excited about. Can't you look beyond this little box that you've stuffed yourself and your perceptions down into the soapbox? Can't you look beyond it for just a minute, please?
J.M. DeBoer, the book Science of the Paranormal, The Truth Behind Telepathy, ESP, Reincarnation, and More Mysterious Phenomena. And I did write a review on Amazon. Headline, Fantastic Roadmap to Innate PSI Abilities Humans Might One Day Conquer. And some already have. His website, jmdevore.com.
People who say that there have been no explanations for the causes to these effects simply have not read the literature.
Thanks for listening.